Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Mark, I've been saying for years that Ping help you play your best, because that is exactly what they've done for me throughout my entire career. And now I've been having a look at the new Blueprint S and T irons, and boy, they are impressive. So much so that I've got the new Blueprint S irons in my bag at the moment.
So what do you like about them so much? I mean, I've never seen you this excited about a golf club.
Well, I could go through the specs, which are exceptional, but I won't. I will say, though, that if you're looking for more ball speed, and if you want to lower your scores, if you want to mix and match and still look great, you should check them out. Because the new Blueprint S and T irons, they are definitely worth a look.
Nice.
Just book in with your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting.
Welcome to week six of the golfing year. And we say it every week, but this week, what a huge week in golf. And we're going to chat about all of it in today's podcast. Thanks to our friends at Ping, they'll help you play your best. You can arrange a Ping club fitting from your local golf shop or professional. And the Golf Clearance Outlet. Head in store in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane or Perth. Or online at golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. But now, let's get into it. The number one Australian golf podcast, Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. This is Talk Birdie to Me.
So, what's this long drive stuff? You see the long drive comp? Well, we got here at Australian Golf Headquarters today. Obviously, a big launch. A long time ago, just talking about long drive competitions, 1999 this was, I was ripping over to try and qualify for the British Open, and I called my friends on the Canadian Tour and got a couple of starts on the Canadian Tour just as a warm-up because, you know, I needed something to play in before going over there. So I rock up to the Alberta Open, which is, you know, a nice tournament, playing on a really good golf course. The draw comes out, and one after another player comes up to me going, "You're playing with him." I'm like, "Playing with who?" He goes, "You're playing with Jason Zubac."
Oh, yeah, he's the long drive champ from years ago,
I said, "Who's Jason Zubac?" Anyway, if you Google him, he's the Don Bradman of long drive competitions. He won the world long drive competition 5 years in a row.
Wow. And then that guy, Jamie Sadlowski.
Yeah, he was
took
there for
over.
A while.
He came down to Australia to play.
Yeah. He was big too. Mm. Anyway, so now I'm keen. All right, now I cannot wait. This is going to be great fun playing with the guy who's won, I think at that stage he'd won four in a row or three in a row or something. He went on to win a couple more. Anyway, we get on the first tee. And I have cranked one off the first tee. I've really smacked it. It went miles. It was unusually high, and it just went right. You know, came off that high toe bit of the driver, and it just took off. And I sat back thinking, right, let's have a look at this bloke. And when he hit the ball,
he smoked you.
When he hit the ball, I thought his driver had broken. I thought he'd cracked it. The noise was so different, and his ball was still going up when it passed my ball. Still going up. Anyway, I reckon for the 36 holes that we played together, I mean, he ended up shooting like 81, 82 or something, right? So he couldn't actually play golf hitting the ball the way he did. But I would say on average, he was 70 metres past me on every drive. There was one par five where it was a three wood to the corner for me and then a three wood to the green, if you nailed them both. He got on that tee. It was a 10th hole. He got on that tee. It was dogleg left. And he was aiming at the green. he was aiming at the green. Anyway, I hit three wood, came up the front trap. He hit driver, and he had 60 yards to the pin. It was incredible just how far he hit the ball. He also set a record for the most number of provisional balls ever hit in 36 holes. I reckon he hit 23.
Yeah, those long drive guys, I mean, they would outdrive you with their five iron.
Easy.
I remember going to the PGA show in Orlando, because that's where I lived every year, and there was a guy there last year I was living there called Kyle Berkshire,
who
has become the new...
He's the god.
He's the god of long driving at the moment, and he put on this clinic where they have a range set up at one of the ends. This is inside, so you hit into a net, which is like 100 yards away. But they've got all the TrackMan data and everything going on, and he was hitting his 5-iron something like 300 yards.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I mean, he had me covered easy with his 5-iron. Yeah. It was scary.
So I'm so curious to know what's going on in this guy, Jason Zubak's bag. Anyway, so about 10 holes in, I know him and I'm talking to him. We've got the biggest crowd that the Alberta Open's ever seen just because of him. And I'm now talking to him about his clubs. He had X500 iron shafts in his irons pushed through an inch.
Ooh.
Think of a telephone pole. He was playing golf with telephone poles.
He could have used Hogan's clubs maybe.
And then I had a look at his driver. Now, his driver, I'd never seen anything like it before. It was a Titleist driver, and it had 5.5 degrees of loft. And I looked at him and I said, 5.5 degrees. It was actually stamped, you know. It wasn't just someone had knocked it up. It was done properly. And I said, 5.5 degrees. Is this what you use in your long drive comps? And he goes, no, I use a 3.5. I said, 3.5? He goes, yeah, yeah. He goes, the only reason I use 3.5 is because you've got to keep it on the fairway for it to count. He said, I've got a 0-degree driver. You should see that go.
Plus with the balls they use too, because they're probably different golf balls.
Pinnacles. He was just using Pinnacle. I asked him about that. He was just using, back in those days, it was just the Pinnacle. And the amount of money I would have given to see him hit the 0-degree driver when his 5.5 was going, on average, 70 metres past my best drive, I would have given anything to see it.
Mm.
He would have gone 100 metres past my drive.
So his short game, not great, given he shot 81.
Well, he just couldn't hit a wedge. Yeah. You know, his wedge, there was a par three where it was a 3-iron for me, and he hit a wedge. he had no chance.
Yep.
I mean, how do you control that?
Yeah.
They
have so much speed that it's almost uncontrollable.
It's uncontrollable.
Yeah.
It's uncontrollable. Anyway, if you're sitting there doing nothing, Google Jason Zubak swing. And just report back.
I remember it.
Talkbirdietome.com.au. Leave a voice message. In fact, you can leave a voice message about anything. I know we've got stacks to talk about today.
Mm.
And, of course, it's going to be the Fenway Group taking on PIF very, very soon. But before we go any further, can I just say the reimagined Pebble Beach event is so good.
It is.
Oh.
And you know what? It turned into a 54-hole no-cut.
Oh, yeah.
Because they cancelled the final round was obviously delayed because of a little gusty, a bit windy. I mean, hey, we could have played it.
Yeah.
No, it was pretty dangerous, actually. And then the Monday forecast as well just turned out so bad that they had to make it a 54-holer. But go on. I love the new format. Explain it.
Well, once upon a time, it was three courses. And amateurs playing in the first three rounds.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I played several of these.
5.5-hour rounds.
Keep going.
Six-hour rounds.
Shocking.
Pretty hard to keep up with what was going on the first 3 days if you were a watcher of the tournament. And then, you know, you always tune in the last day. They'd be playing in threes. They'd be playing Pebble Beach. It was great fun watching it.
Yep.
But now, just Pebble, just Spyglass. Amateurs only play in the first 2 days. You've just got 80 players. It's one of the new eight or so elevated events. They're playing for a lot of money.
Yep.
And just the pros to play on Saturday, Sunday, and only on Pebble Beach. I mean, just watching Pebble Beach every year this time of year is going to be a treat for us. It's going to be an absolute treat. So well done. I think it's a huge improvement on what's been there in the past.
Yeah, well, the coverage, it's basically golf porn for those viewers, pretty much with the drone shots that they get out over the Pacific Ocean. It was good in a way to get rid of Monterey, because from a logistical standpoint. I was listening to Steve John on another podcast earlier, who's the tournament director, and he said it's just so hard getting all these players over to that other course as well, whereas Spyglass and Pebble are very close together.
Yeah.
And, I mean, ideally you want just an 18-hole course, but 36 holes very close together made it so much easier for him and running the tournament, bringing the amount of players down, because it wasn't just, you know, a normal 156 field. I think it went up to close to 200 pros playing, so the cuts were always low. 6-hour rounds over 3 days, you're playing different courses, and the amateurs, they want to get their money's worth. And if you're in one of those sections, if you're in the same field as, say, a Bill Murray or one of the celebrities, they take forever because from the green walking to the next tee, they're getting asked for all these autographs, they're playing up to the crowd. It's an absolute nightmare.
So you famously, on this podcast, met with Clint Eastwood, which would have been incredible back in your time. Yeah. Who else did you get to play with? I mean, we know about Clint. Did you get anybody else, like a sports star? Or
no, well, I used to play with a good buddy of mine, Michael Fitzpatrick, who lived on the 13th hole at Pebble Beach. So I had a pretty good view in the morning. And
what would that real estate be worth in 2020? 24 on the 13th.
Yeah, it's I'd hate to think.
It's right, if you've never been to Pebble Beach,
par 4 up the hill.
Pretty much right in the middle of the golf course that goes along the beachfront. Well, you couldn't get a more perfect joint.
When I woke up in the morning, I had a view, obviously, over the Monterey Peninsula. And
you stayed at his house as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had the guest wing on the end.
Yeah.
And out the front, you had the 13th. Beyond that was the ninth hole. And then and you look down to 8, 7,
gorgeous.
I might have to post a picture of that, actually, Dan, because it was something very, very special.
Yeah, sure, true, yeah.
But celebrity-wise, I didn't play with any in that sense. He used to have a party usually on a Saturday night, and they'd come to his house for dinners and things like that. Well, we had Kurt Russell, Don Cheadle, you know, from the Ocean's 11. What's the guy's name? Josh Duhamel, who's the Transformers actor. Married Fergie, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, sounds right.
And then who was the other guy? Who's a lovely guy? Left-hand, Oliver Hudson, who's Kate Hudson's brother. Kurt Russell steps up, basically. So I used to give him lessons down in the simulator. It was quite funny.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, it was great fun.
Did you notice how everyone's a left-hander? Gets a little credit.
Oh, yeah,
there's
absolutely.
There's a little bit of extra mayonnaise if someone's a left-hander.
Yeah, the right-handers don't get lessons.
No, they don't get anything.
No, they don't want to talk
They don't get anything. Anyway, we did our podcast last week, and then, of course, as usual, on cue, the big news came out that the Fenway Group, or the, what is it, the something sports group?
Strategic Sports Group. It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? Yeah. SSG. Let's just call it.
It's the most boring name ever, by the way.
Well, it's a lot of them to do with Fenway, the Fenway Group, and they have come up with $1.5 billion that the PGA Tour can access immediately, and $3 billion in the kick locked away to try and combat an $800 billion fund called the PIF.
Yeah, it's an interesting one as far as is it. Well, we can look at this different ways, obviously. And an interesting fact is, do you know who was an executive vice president for the Fenway Sports Group?
No.
One Mr. Jay Monahan.
Yeah, all right.
So, you know, you could look at that in different ways. Yeah. But anyway, he's going to become the CEO of this new for-profit PGA Tour Enterprises, which is now valued at $12 billion. Thank you very much.
Mm.
So what did they put in? 1.5, and they're going to possibly put in $3 billion for a minority investment in this PGA Tour enterprise. I was looking it up, and it says it allows for a co-investment from the PIF.
Correct.
In the future, subject, and this is interesting, subject to all necessary regulatory approvals.
Right.
So that wording to me sort of says, well, right now we're kind of thinking, we're going to take this because it basically combats, you know, that they're financially secure for the next bit, obviously. And after that, maybe we'll get some PIF money, maybe we won't. Depends how all the talks goes, depending on the DOJ and all that sort of stuff, the, what is it, Department of Justice, when they look through all those sorts of findings. But the thing is, SSG, they're going to want a return. Because they're a private equity group, and they're going to want a return. So how are they going to do it? That's going to be the big question, I think, going forward.
Yeah.
And I think there's a few ways. Like the biggest moneymaker outside the majors, and the weird thing is PGA Tour don't own any of the majors.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a fallback for them. But the other one is the Ryder Cup. because the PGA of America own that. So maybe I'll use some of that cash to go, hey, can we do a deal for that perhaps? That might be an idea, a way. Yeah. I mean, the TV production, they'll obviously look at all that. Be interesting how they're going to, you know, get back an return on their investment.
There's a few things I want to bring up, okay? So if you were a LIV player and you went across thinking that the PIF was in charge and they had the cards, you know, they had a full house and maybe the PGA Tour didn't quite have a full house, you would be forgiven to think that about a month ago. And you went over, hello, John Rahm, hello,
Tyrrell Hatton,
thinking or maybe even given the word that, hey, we're getting back together with this mob, take the money now, this is just a shot across the bow. If you saw what was going on this week, I reckon you'd be having heart palpitations if you want to come back and play. Now, I'm not saying that's over. What I'm saying is that that's not going the plan for those two to see the strategic sports group get back in play.
Did you see Jordan Spieth's comments?
I've got it right here.
Oh, okay. Go on.
So, Jordan, I've got Rory McIlroy's comments in relation to Jordan Spieth. So, Jordan Spieth came out and said, this is great. We don't really need the PIF anymore.
And he sits on the policy board.
Correct. So, Jordan and Spieth have had a bit of a powwow. And Rory was asked for his thoughts on that powwow moving forward. And he said, having PIF as your partner as opposed to not having them as your partner, I don't think is an option for the game of golf. I think they're committed to investing in golf and in the wider world of sport. And if you can get them to invest their money right away to unify the game of golf, that's a good thing. So now Rory's in two minds. You know, you're going to have a lot, and like he's one of the power players. Mm. I mean, he doesn't sit on the board anymore. Is there a world where Rory McIlroy gets pinched to live? Is there a world where that could possibly happen?
I don't see it.
I don't see it either. But
not pinched. I mean, he's sort of come around to the fact that obviously they're here to stay. They want to put a boatload of money into golf. Let's all figure it out. Get all the best players in the world playing together again. I mean, he mentioned, what was it, his win the other day, you know, was cheapened by the fact that the best players in the world weren't there. Yep. He's playing a nice political sort of role in all this, maybe trying to get both sides together. And you wouldn't have thought that 6 months ago, that's for sure, or a year ago, whenever he first sort of started talking about it.
Word gets back to me. You know my sources.
The source.
You know my source. Word gets back to me that a lot of the American players, footnote, Rory McIlroy jumped off the, what was that committee he was on the PGA Tour? The players'
policy board.
Policy board. Mm-hmm. So Rory's off. A lot of the American players saw the PIF coming in and looking at a GP-style tour, weren't real happy with Traveller.
Oh, of course not.
Around the whole world. And they were so desperate to not travel to the Japan Open, the Australian Open, the South African Open, the Scottish, the Irish, whatever that Grand Prix style of tour would look like, that this is why they've gone to who they've gone to, the Fenway Group.
And the sad thing is...
Does that make sense in your head? Because, I mean, this reports back to me, but you lived it.
I know the American players hate to travel, for sure. Being an international over there, it was nothing for me because I travelled all around the world because you had to living in Australia. But American players, they don't want to fly, you know, 14, 20 hours down to Sydney or wherever, or to Japan or wherever they got to go to. They'll do it a couple of times a year when they got to play the Open Championship and they might get paid enough cash to go play somewhere in Asia or something for an event. But, no, traveling certainly. But they like to stay home. And it's interesting. Once they put this money in and all those guys are going, now this sounds quite interesting now. We've got all this cash to go.
Yeah.
And if they do go down that route and they don't go down the PIF, as I said before, they need to improve things. And one way I think they could really improve it, this FedEx Cup playoffs, they've been a great sponsor of the tour for many, many years. But it doesn't it doesn't excite me. It doesn't really work that much the way they do it. I think they should go with, let's just do a season-long thing, and like tennis, have a season-long, season-ending finale where top eight players, right? Top eight players, they go at it.
Play a
round robin match play. Imagine if you had Rory versus Scotty, Scheffler. You had Victor versus Cantlay or whoever. I mean, imagine that little round robin, and then the top two, final day, bang. And he's your best player of the year.
Yeah, I love it.
That would be awesome.
I think it makes a lot of sense.
You mean like a sudden death type thing?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Start with a bit of round robins. So everyone gets to play against each other.
I thought like you hated round robins.
Like they do in the tennis.
You're back on board now.
Only for this one event. Okay. Match play, it's normally you lose and you go home.
I know.
For this one event.
Welcome aboard, okay. Nick. It's good to have you on our team.
For the world match play, should be knockout. But if you're trying to find the best player amongst all these guys, imagine the match play comps against, because they would hate to lose to each other. Rather than a stroke play event where you've got, okay, I'm starting 10 shots ahead of this guy. See, that format just doesn't work for me.
No, it's not, you've nailed it. I reckon you've absolutely nailed it. And it would be a much better concept. But can you see, I just see it all falling into place, what we're talking about here. Rory jumps off that policy board. The rest of the American players run to another group who want to invest money just so they don't have to travel 10 times a year.
Mm.
I mean, that might sound incredibly ludicrous to other people listening to this, but that is the way they think.
Yeah.
That is the way the Americans think. Yeah. They just do not want to travel. And here's the thing, you know, we heard the live golf. What is it? It's good for golf. What they always say, it's we're going to grow the game.
Mm.
I'm absolutely certain that when they started live, growing the game to them was to take the best players around the world.
Yep.
That was growing the game.
Mm.
Well, and I think that's the biggest fear of the American players, is actually to grow the game in other big places around the world.
Yeah, because the sad thing is, from all this, all we're hearing about is equity for the players, right? Which I get, and they're going to become the first big major sports organization where the players are going to have ownership. I mean, I think that's great, but the saddest thing is no one's talking about the fans. What's best for the fans out there, and what's best for people that want to watch around the world? And as you just said, growing the game, playing in all these different areas. When Liv came down to Adelaide, that was an amazing event down there. It was fantastic.
Huge.
Now, creating that Grand Prix style, as you said, would be a phenomenal thing to do. But you've nailed it on the head there. I think your source...
Well, it's not me. The source is the source is good.
Yeah, it is good.
He's real good.
He's been pretty spot on.
He has been spot on.
And we know where it's coming from.
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Hello, Scotty Scheffler.
You guys see any of Liv in Mexico on the weekend?
No, look, I've missed it. I actually, when Pebble wasn't on Monday morning, I was flicking around. I thought Channel 7 would have it. I was really keen to have a bit of a look and see what was going on, but I couldn't find it.
I didn't watch it, but I kept up with the results. So they've changed their format, by the way, a little bit. Just to update everyone on out there.
Please.
It's only a smidge.
Well, that's okay. This isn't the Ping Global results that we'll do shortly.
So they added the 13th team, John Rahm, right?
Yep.
Because last time we did the pod, we didn't know what was coming out. And guess what? Just after we finished our pod, Legion 8.
Like an hour after.
Yeah. Legion 8 comes out. Yep. So, you know, as it happens. Now, apparently that's got to do with some Roman Empire, you know, warrior type thing.
Which Pete from Brisbane, our listener, did predict.
Oh, there you go. So he did too.
Well done, Pete.
He did. Yes,
well done, Pete.
Legion 8. So his team was Tyrrell Hatton went straight with him.
Yep.
What was the young guy's name? Caleb Surratt, who just came out of college. I think University of Tennessee. He goes.
Right.
And then Kieran Vincent. So they made up a new team. So they have 13 teams now. So you've got 52 players. They've also got two wild cards.
Yeah.
So there's 54 players now. So 54 with the Liv, obviously being the number 54. That works out nicely for them. The two wild cards are Laurie Cantor, who absolutely crapped the bed in the Q school, if you remember.
Yes, that's right.
So he got a spot, which is great.
Yeah, good.
And Hudson Swafford. Now, best three scores used to count for round one and two and three, but now all four scores count for round three.
Good.
Okay, so the final round, that's all better. Four players have got a man up and play the game.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, which
was
really good.
That's much better.
And then the top 12 teams make the season end. So whoever finishes last in the team, you don't make the final event of the season. And then the prize money changed a little bit. So last money, instead of being $120,000, it's $50,000. Poor guys, but
imagine, who are the two players playing with Hatton and Rahm? Who are they?
Caleb Surratt, who just came out of
college.
Yeah, apparently he was one of the best college players, but I hadn't heard of him, to be honest. And then Kieran Vincent, who qualified from, I'm trying to think how he qualified.
How about that? So, I mean, these two kids, they're playing with John Rahm, is their teammate all of a sudden, and a full-on lunatic.
And an early...
and bang.
And an early Ping Global result, Legion 1.
Oh, you're kidding
the
me.
The team event. Yeah, I'll update everyone
on it. I thought they were behind. I checked halfway through, and they were way back.
No, they came through.
I didn't even know. I've had a very, very busy day. can I just put out there, I had a swap day on the weekend.
Oh, you went from Kingston to Royal Melbourne, right?
That's right.
Mm.
I would like any groundskeeper out there in charge of putting the holes in the greens when they know they've got a swap day on, because I reckon RM were having some fun with the Kingston Heath members where they had those flags on Saturday. It was incredible. You know, the sixth hole, all right? The sixth hole is one of
the most famous
golf holes in the world. Some say it's the best hole on the whole property.
Must have put the pin left for you.
Where do you reckon left?
On the slight upslope just over the bunker?
We put our golf ball, right?
Yep.
We put our golf, it's like the front of a Volkswagen.
Oh, yeah.
An old Volkswagen, right? Yep. It's like that. And it goes into the deepest bunker in Australia in the front. We put a golf ball, we just placed it.
Mm-hmm. Where?
5 feet in front of the hole.
Yep.
And it rolled into the trap. So that's where they did, I mean, honestly.
Okay, was it a stroke comp?
No, it was a stale
comp. Okay, so you could at least put a wipe on the card.
I had a six. Thank you very much.
Did you put it in the bunker?
It was one of the best sixes you've ever seen. But I just implore any groundskeepers out there who know what really happens on swap days. And I want you to call and leave a message.
Can they be anonymous?
You can be anonymous. You don't even... Well, we kind of... Yeah, we need to know the club because we need to know the holes.
So it can't be anonymous.
But the things you've done on a swap day when you're putting the holes out and you know that you have you're about to wreak havoc with the other mob that are coming around to see your golf course. I'll leave it at that.
I love it.
Oh, my God. It was incredible. Whose turn for a top five? It's my turn.
Well, it's actually my turn, but we've flipped it again. I'm going to do it. So I'm going to my masterclass, because I kind of got a lot of requests after last week's masterclass with the uphill lies.
Yeah.
They wanted to know downhill. So
that's a good idea.
I figure I'll do this week's and you can do the top five again.
All right. I'll get my top five organized.
What is it?
Something was sent around before, and it is, I think I'm going to do the top five wanker moves you see in golf on the weekend. Right?
Okay.
So not on the pros,
right?
With your buddies. The top five wanker moves in golf. That's next.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, if you haven't checked out the Golf Clearance Outlet, then you, I can guarantee you this, are missing out. And if you have, well, you know what we're talking about. Great time to drop in, because with all the new equipment released in January, good old Sam at the Golf Clearance Outlet is licking his lips, because the stores are chock full of 2023 branded clearance product. And you know, that was a hell of a year for golf equipment, Nick.
You're spot on there, Mark. There's heaps of gear for righties, of course, but as you know, I am a lefty, so there's a heap of gear for lefties as well, and plenty for both men and women. And if you're after a great Prezi idea, you can get gift cards in-store or online.
So if you're looking for great golf gear and great prices, the Golf Clearance Outlet needs to be in your plans to go and check it out. See the team in-store at Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth, or online, golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. It's that simple, Nick.
Can't wait.
Hang on, Nick. I thought you were righty putting now.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Hey, Nick, I know you've heard of the Watch My Numbers app. It is brand new, and it is going to dominate the golf app scene for a long, long time. If you want to improve your game, you need to know the areas you're doing well in and where you need to improve. And this app will tell you exactly that, Nick.
Yeah, you're spot on, Mark. It's the most powerful database golf app in the world, and it helps analyze and improve your game like never before because it uses real-time data from your rounds and highlights the areas of your game that you want to look at.
You get actionable and usable info in minutes, not hours. That's really important. It's easy to use. You can set up your profile very quickly. I've done mine. And start accessing data and subscriber-only content straight away.
Hmm. Who's it aimed at?
Well, it's aimed at people who want to improve their game. It's for all levels of every golfer out there, particularly powerful if you're a mid to low handicapper. But it's great for the elite level and pros as well.
So elite and pros as well. I like that.
Watch my numbers. Download it from the App Store and turn your bogeys in the birdies.
If you're enjoying the podcast, make sure to subscribe and never miss an episode. And maybe share it with a friend. Now back to Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. This is Talk Birdie to Me.
Top five.
Today's top five. You're responsible for this one in a big way, Dan. You're responsible. You got it from somewhere, and it made me think you had the top golf douchebag moves on the golf app.
But
douchebag doesn't really work here in Australia.
No.
So this is going to be the top five wanker moves that you see while playing in your local comp or your weekend warrior, whatever it might be. And for our American listeners, it's a wanker, douchebag, sort of the same thing.
Similar.
And for our Laughian listeners, you get the drift.
Can I make a request, Mark?
Yes.
As you go through your top five, can you guys be honest and admit to having, whether you have or have not done any of those things?
Yeah, sure.
Hey, but we're different, mate. We play for money. We're entertainers.
Oh, okay.
We're in the entertainment business, Dan.
Okay. Yeah, pros do.
All right.
Top five wankers in golf. You are just going to number one right there.
All right, at number five, and this is very funny when it's done in a ridiculous way, club twirling after bombing a drive. I mean, come on. It's enough's enough. Who are you twirling for? The people in your group? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not a club twirler, though. I can't club twirl, Dan, so that answers you.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, can you club twirl, Mark?
It just naturally happens. Just naturally. My fingers, I must have sticky fingers or something, and it just happens naturally. Number four, waving goodbye to your golf ball after nailing a drive.
Oh, dear. Right.
Oh, that is so funny.
You know who you are out there.
Yes.
So funny.
Mm-hmm.
Number three. Now, this was an old Colin Montgomery, Seve Ballesteros move.
Okay.
You're playing partners over the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You've already played, and you just don't care because you're so into your own game, you couldn't give a stuff about anybody else. And your mate or your playing partner's about to pull the trigger, and you undo your glove.
Ooh.
And the Velcro just goes whoosh,
yeah.
Right when they're trying to play.
Oh, yeah. Well, the other one is when you're on the green about to putt, and the caddy of the other player starts jingling the pockets because he's got coins in there or something like that. That's a shocker.
Wanker move. Colin Montgomery was the best at that.
Okay.
He got me about four times in one round. Colin Montgomery, just to add to the annoyance of that person.
I think we might have to have an intervention here with Mark with Monty.
I need to sit on someone's couch. I do.
Was Monty the one we messaged last year? He commented on one of our posts.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He did.
Very funny.
We should get him on. Number two. And this doesn't happen. I mean, I'm surprised this isn't at number one, actually. But number two, walking in a putt.
Mm-hmm.
From 8 feet.
Yep.
Like, you know it's going in.
Yeah, I've done that.
And you do the Jack Nicklaus.
The
putter goes up and you chase after it. Tiger Woods was pretty good with it as well.
Well, you have to when you're in contention.
But you're just there playing with your mates.
Not in the first round.
And you're walking in a putt from 8 feet. Bloody hell. And the number one wanker move, and I know so many blokes and a few women who do this, saying you hit it off the toe after hitting a drive that went past everybody else's or a heel.
Yeah.
There you go. Nice shot.
Yep.
Great drive. Great drive, Nick. Yeah, I got that a little off the heel.
Yep.
Oh, please. Just go away. If you are guilty of any of those things, you are a wanker. Yeah. End of story.
Or if you've got any that you think of that weren't on the list.
Hey, Mark.
Absolutely.
You've definitely done that last one.
I've done them all.
Yeah.
I've done every single one of them. I've done them all.
Last week we were talking about, you guys were talking about your books, the favourite books that you think are
most
favourite. And I asked you to give us one book and you, I think, gave us three each. Classic top five style.
Well, actually, we've got to have a top five book at some stage later in the year. Can we put it down? We've got a quiet week. I want to know your top five books.
Yeah, well, we did our favourite books, didn't we?
We almost got to a top five last week.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but we have to sit down and think of it. That was off the cuff. That was off the cuff.
Well, it was. But remember, you talked about a book that you couldn't recall the name of, but you loved when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Eric, who listens to the pod.
Eka.
He knows what it is, he reckons, and we're going to give him a call.
Let's give him a call.
He's going to tell us about it, and you can confirm whether indeed Eric is right or wrong.
But he seems like a nice person, Eric.
Why?
Quite often I'll have a look at somebody's Twitter feed and see what they're on about.
Okay.
See what side of politics they're on. He seems like a nice fella.
Well, we'll find out.
You'll soon find.
Maybe we won't.
It's a dead giveaway.
It's Eric speaking.
Eric, it's Mark Allen and Nico Hearn.
How are you guys?
Hey, mate, we're very well. Thanks for getting back to us on socials. Now, Dan, he had a couple of questions for us. Is that right?
Well, Eric was talking about the book that you were banging on about last week that you said was great but couldn't remember the name of, and Eric reckons he might know what it is.
What is it, Eka?
Miracle on the 17th Green by James Patterson.
Now, I haven't read that one, but the one that I was talking about is called The Pro, and it's a beauty. I loved it. I can't actually remember what happened. I read it so long ago. He got some magic club or something like that, and then he turned pro in the seniors and went ballistic. But it was very, very good. And there's a lot of funny stories about life as a professional for the first time that made sense in my head that I had a bit of a giggle about.
Non-fiction or fiction?
No, fiction.
Oh, okay.
Complete fiction. Fiction's... Which one is it? I haven't been to school for a long
time.
Yeah, well, it's complete fiction then.
Okay.
Yeah, right. It's made up. It's a made up story. Did you go and get it? Did you try and get it, Eric?
No, I haven't. I think that the only copy that I found was available on eBay, so I don't even think Amazon has it. But I did read the little short blurb, and you've sold me now. I've got to go find myself this exquisite vintage copy then.
Yeah, get it. It was good fun.
Whereabouts do you play golf, Eric?
Oh, I'm a bit of a ranger. I don't really head out to the golf course much.
So now there's lots of different ways to enjoy golf, and just going to the range is one of them. You know, going to the indoor. What about the indoor stuff into the screen? You can play any golf course you like. Do you do a bit of that?
No, I haven't tried it. It's on my to-do list for this year, actually.
Okay.
It's getting quite prevalent here up in Brisbane.
Well, our goal, Eric, is to get you out in the golf course at some stage this year, get you off the range and turn you into a fair dinkum golfer.
That sounds good.
All right.
Before you let Eric go, Mark, I know you're trying to avoid the next part of Eric's question. Eric wants to pick you up on something you said last week on the pod when you were being a little bit inadvertently crude when you were quoting the Lady Marmalade song.
Oh, you mean Voulez-vous coucher au revoir ce soir?
That's right.
Yeah, that's the only French I know.
Well, Eric knows what that means.
What does it mean?
It means, would you like to sleep with me tonight?
Oh, dear. Well, you've got your new pickup line for the clubs, Mark.
Well, it is funny you say that because I didn't know, but I promise you this. If I ever met a French girl overseas, I would say the only French I know is Voulez-vous coucher au revoir ce soir. They used to run away like you've no one's business.
I don't think Trish's going to approve.
No, she absolutely would not. She would not. That's fantastic.
Good on you, Eric.
All right.
Thanks, Eric.
See you, lads. Bye.
Thanks for being a good sport, mate. Appreciate it. We've got to get him onto the golf course.
Absolutely.
It's so much fun walking around, smelling the roses, looking at the rosellas.
But you're right, there are various types of golfers, and one of them simulators and others putt-putts and rangers, and obviously we want him to be a green grass golfer.
At some stage. All right, let's keep this podcast moving.
All right, the Ping Global results this week. We had some Ping winners, by the way. Firstly, I'm going to say the Vic Open had dual Ping winners.
Oh, what a surprise, you focusing on the Ping.
Is that right?
Well, of course.
Does Coletta play Ping, does he?
Coletta is a Ping player.
I didn't know.
Been a long time Ping player.
Yeah, okay.
As is Ashley Lau, who won the Women's Vic Open.
Wow, and 66 in the last round. Was that the low? It must have been close to the low score of the day for the girls. So just,
I think it was, yeah.
Just shoot the low score of the day and win, and coming from nowhere, it's fabulous golf.
Well, remember, she shot 61 at Rosebud the week before, so she's gone runner-up and victory. The first professional win, which is awesome for
her. How much cash? It was $450,000 total.
So around about
$75,000. Right on it.
Yeah, around that mark. Yep. I think there might be $100 here or there. But a great win for Ashley Lau in the Women's Vic Open, who defeated the Sunday Queen, G.A. Shin, by one shot. Now, G.A. is actually staying on at the 13th Beach to run a little training camp. She has about 10 of these young pros that she mentors, and they're going to hang around and do a little bit of practice and work on their games. How good is that? I mean, that's awesome for us.
So. G.A. Shin, what a star.
I know. Yeah, third place was Jongmin Cho. She had a bit of a rivalry with Lydia Ko as a junior. Used to be the number one amateur in the world and was an outstanding player. She actually had the lead as well with three holes to go, but bogeyed a couple of the last three, which is a bit of a shame. And Min Ae-yoon finished fourth.
Okay.
Also from Ping, by the way, Karis Davidson, who was in the final group. Didn't quite get it done, unfortunately, but she was tied for fifth.
Ping stuff.
And, of course, Ping's Cassie Porter finished in ninth position. Hey, come on, I've got to throw it in there. But
I do like the girls with the different Ping. It's nice.
Yeah.
You know, the boys have got
the logo.
It's a different font.
No, it looks great.
It's really, really good.
Yeah. And it was also great to see Carrie Webb make an appearance as well.
I mean,
it was a one-off thing for her to come down and play. It was awesome. And she ended up having a really strong weekend. Shot like 67-70 to finish tied 11.
Wow.
So really good play on the weekend from Carrie. But on the men's side, Brett Coletta shot back-to-back 65s to beat someone who I sort of have a word to every now and then, Jordan Zunick, by two shots. And they were actually tied with four holes to play, and Brett just made a couple of birdies and striped a three-wood into the final hole. Although I think he said he caught it a bit out the toe, but those Ping three-woods, they just keep going through the wind beautifully.
Why did Jordan Zunick hit a four-iron off the tee on 18 when he needed to make something happen to win the tournament? Is my question to you.
I know.
Mentor?
I haven't spoken to him yet, but he did the interview after, and he said it was the strategy he played all week, and if he'd hit the solid four iron, he still could have got home. I think he still could have got home with three wood, but he was a little bit far back. He wanted to take that right bunker out of play, from what he said. But you're right, I would have loved to have seen him taking the right bunker out of play by maybe smashing driver down there.
Yeah.
But it's a big risk, though, because if you're not feeling it, you're not feeling it. Look, I mean, it's obviously a pressure situation. If he had full 100% confidence in it, I think he would have gone for it. But it was his play all week, so he's probably tossing up his mind, do I do this, don't I? And I can understand that, but I'll have a good chat with him
about it. Isn't that amazing? Because there'll be people sitting here listening. I know exactly what you're saying. There'll be people listening to our podcast going, hang on a second, he's coming second.
Yep.
I mean, surely his game is in great shape.
Well,
why wouldn't you just hit a three-wood down there just to guarantee yourself an iron in?
Well, three-wood and two-iron for him brings the bunker on the right into play, and that's the one he didn't want to go in. So four-iron is kind of in between all the bunkers. So he had three-wood left, but unfortunately didn't hit the shot
he just
wanted.
He just had to nail it off. If he nails it off the tee, there's no questions.
No, exactly. Right. But it was a great finish to the tournament, and congrats to both Brett Coletta and Ashley Lau for taking
it. How well
that
was Brett Coletta swinging the club, by the way, I saw about five swings. I rewound to have a look. And I also rewound because there was a bit of controversy to whether he marked his ball correctly on the last. But what actually happened, if you just watch the TV, you might have missed one missed move. So Brett Coletta actually had to move his ball for both players that he was playing with on the last. So a lot of people saw him move it twice early. They missed the one in between, and they only saw him move it back one putt length. But he did. He actually moved
it was
the right amount of time.
All above board.
He did well.
Yeah.
He was swinging it really well.
He was.
I want to swing it like Brett Coletta.
So do I. I played with him up at the Cathedral Invitational before Christmas. First time I've ever played with him.
Yeah.
It was 17 holes he put on a clinic. It was unbelievable. Unfortunately, in amongst the one bad hole, which was the 11th, he made a triple bogey, but a bit out of nowhere. And that's where I think a good caddy could have advised him on how to do that. But the other 17 was incredible, and he's got a heck of a future. He almost got his PGA Tour card a few years ago from the Korn Ferry Tour. Just missed out, fell off, but then he won last year on the Challenger PGA Tour of Australasia. This win as well. Yeah. Keeps going. I think he might have moved into third or fourth on the order of merit now, and DP World Card. That'd be fun.
I did notice at the Vic Open, and I wasn't commentating, but I did notice that the people who won came from very early in the groups, not in the last two groups, probably in the fourth or fifth last group, both players, it seemed. It was actually around about the third last. Anyway, did everybody in that last group have a caddy when they were playing for so much money?
Ooh, you've got me thinking now, actually.
Who didn't have a caddy who was in the last two groups when you're playing for close to $80,000 first prize? It's
who did you notice? Because I can't remember. Did you notice anyone?
I noticed a couple of players.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we've spoken about
this. I don't
this.
Like it.
No.
I mean, you're either a professional or you are kind of just playing it. It's your hobby.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. We had two 54-hole events on the weekend. And obviously one being Live Mexico, where Joaquin Niemann shot a first-round 59. Thank you very much. 12 under par. Didn't realise, I think, as he teed off 18, that it was a par 71.
He didn't realise.
No, because someone yelled out, shoot 58, and he's gone, 58? What do you mean? This must be a par 71, okay. You know, if he birdies the last. But he ended up defeating Sergio Garcia on the fourth playoff hole. John Rahm, the new addition to Liv, was tied for the lead with two holes to go, but bogeyed the last two, hit it in the water on 17.
Really?
Yeah, a bit of a tough one. But they did win the team event, so that helps the team out, obviously.
Well, see, I, when I crossed over on Monday morning, Rahm was miles off halfway through his last round.
Made a bit of a charge. And I think, you know what helped him as well was on the Saturday's round, second round, and this is interesting right here, because you brought up Tiger Woods at the Masters. Remember when he took the drop? So he took a wrong drop on round two. They've looked at it that Saturday night. Sunday morning, he was assessed a two-stroke penalty, but they let him play the third round. I thought if you signed for a wrong
After Tiger, they changed the rule.
They have changed it?
Yeah, they've changed the rule.
I haven't
now.
Looked it up. All right.
Yeah,
fair enough.
But back when Tiger did it, that was, the rule hadn't been changed. But when they went and changed all those other rules and, you know, we've got no more hazards, their penalty areas and all the others, you know, the drop by your knee and all that kind of stuff, that was one of the rules that got done as well.
Okay. Niemann won even with a two-stroke penalty, so probably deserved to win, I guess you could say.
Rory McIlroy had a penalty too early.
Took a wrong drop.
Exactly the same thing that Tiger did.
He was leading the Pebble Beach event, which I'll get to shortly.
Did he make a 10 or something?
He made a triple, I think it was. Yeah, it wasn't great. But Legion 8 won the team event. Ripper coming third for a while, but unfortunately finished fourth, so they don't get any cash for the team. So never mind. Pebble Beach.
Yes.
Turned into a three-day event, obviously, because of the weather issues, no cut, 54-holer. Early on in the week, they had some bit of conjecture about the sponsor exemptions.
Why?
Because they get four exemptions into these no-cut elevated events. Yeah. Three of them, funnily enough, sit on the policy board of the tour.
Right.
So some of the players are going, hang on, well, that is a bit fishy. But when you look at it, you go, okay, Adam Scott's won. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Webb Simpson, US Open champion. The one they were a bit going, hang on, this is a bit funny, Peter Malnati.
Yeah,
well, he's a bit of a grinder on tour, but from what I heard with Peter, he's supported that event for so long. The amateurs that he always plays with love him.
Okay.
So I can totally agree with all that.
So can we put the policy board on notice that we're watching from this point forward? And if Molinari, what's his name?
Malnati
gets Peter another Malnati. One.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, it's open season.
So we almost had another 59. Wyndham Clark in the third round, which turned out to be the winning round, shot 60.
Yeah.
Sets the new course record, although it was pick and place, preferred lies, so really it's not official.
And as soft as butter.
Yeah,
too. The John was as soft as butter, but still two eagles on a way to a 28 in the front nine at Pebble Beach, and then the toughest hole on the course is 10, and he's birdied that one as well. Oh, no, 9 was the toughest hole on the course.
Could have been, 9 would have been. But the last three holes, he had three looks at it, one of them for eagle, and left them all short in the jaws. So a bit of a shame. But
Jason Day was up there too.
He was tied for sixth, but Wyndham Clark beat your buddy, your Texas Tech mate, Ludwig.
Yes.
Yes, by a shot. And Mathieu Pavon, the Frenchman, Vive la France. He was going for back-to-back. I think he might have taken it out if they went one more day, but he finished third.
Can I don't talk about betting in golf too often, but I am going to put as much money as I possibly can on Ludwig Aubert. To win the Masters in his first go.
Wow, that's a big call.
The more I watch him play.
Big call.
He is so ready to do something special. incredible. You know, he played in the Ryder Cup before he played in his first major.
It's crazy, isn't it? It is crazy how good this
anyway,
kid is.
Ludwig, I reckon because it's his first Masters, I reckon you'll get really good odds.
When Mark says, I'm going to put as much as I can on to win, that means I'll put as much as Trish will allow me to put on.
Yes. No, I've got a little secret account.
About $20? Okay, right.
She doesn't know about it.
Oh, there you go. Okay, the other thing that sort of happened in the event was someone's first tournament as a professional.
Oh, yeah.
Nick Dunlap.
Yes.
And he finished dead last.
Can you remember your first hit as a professional? The very first, you stood on the tee and you were playing for money. What did you do?
I won it.
You're joking.
The Rottnest Pro-Am.
You're kidding me.
As a trainee pro.
Oh, that's unreal.
My boss said, I'll go and play because I can't. I was a first-year trainee. I ended up coming tied first with Paul Archibald. There's a bit of history.
Well, the reason I asked the question is because I remember my first shot as a professional. It was at Lang Lang. And I was, out in the 13th hole or something. And I cold topped it. I cold topped it. It was just, I ended up shooting par or something.
Wow.
But something is different.
Mm.
And Nick, a bit like, how many cuts in a row did Justin Rose miss?
So about 21.
21 cuts.
I played
in
with
a row.
Justin while he was doing that.
Yeah. So 21, Justin Rose turned pro. Something just didn't fit in his mind and he missed the first 21 cuts in a row. Coming last in your first event as a professional after winning an event as an amateur. Yep. It's not the worst crime in the world.
That's okay. And it worked out okay for Justin Rose as well. So he had a decent career, didn't he?
He's done well.
You called it though last week. You said he was right not to play Torrey Pines.
Yep.
First outing, not quite what he would have
wanted.
That's
right. If he went back there and played it and came last there or did something miserable, then he wouldn't have as much cash in his back pocket as he does today.
Oh, there you go.
So well done to his management.
No, absolutely.
Clever.
He'll be okay.
Okay, on the DP World Tour, the Bahrain Championship, Dylan Fratelli had a two-shot win. Well done to the South African. He's been playing on the PGA Tour last year, but I think he lost his card. Now he's back on DP World Tour.
It hurts me to see so many South African flags on the first page of the leaderboard every week.
Yep.
And the reason there are so many South African flags on there is because the Sunshine Tour has been a part of the DP World Tour for 35 years.
Correct.
And we missed that boat. It hurts me. Remember when we were trying to get One Asia up and going?
Yes, I remember that.
What a fair dinkum disaster that was. If we just said, let's go with the European Tour 35 years ago, there'd be as many Australian flags on the leaderboard as there are South African flags.
Well, we're still co-sanctioning the Australian Open and the PGA down here, so that's we're still in there, don't worry.
On
the Aussie front, Dave Micheluzzi made the cut on the number, I think. Finished tied for 16th, so well done, Dave.
Well done, Dave.
Actually, no, he didn't make the cut on the number. That was Hayden Barron, I think, in his first event. Had to birdie the last, so impressive.
And
he did it. But Micheluzzi and Harrison Endicott tied for 16th. Hayden Barron tied for 43rd. And Jason Scribner tied for 56th. On the Corn Ferry Tour at the Panama Championship, Isaiah Salinda just snuck it home with an 8-shot win. Well done, Isaiah. Unbelievable. Curtis Luck was going really well, but unfortunately had a final round 77 to finish back in the field. But
hockey sticks.
Made the cut. Well done.
God, I used to hate hockey sticks.
A couple of little side notes on this Ping Global results.
Yeah.
I just want to make a mention to Peter Senior, who broke his age the other day.
Unreal.
Plays off a +3. Shot 63 at Sanctuary Cove. He's age 64. He had 40 points in the comp.
Yep.
Didn't win it. Came runner-up in A grade. Bit of a shame, but shout out to Peter. You're a legend.
Was he
still playing?
+3.3 or something.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Good on him.
How good is that guy?
By the way, shooting your age in the 60s is the best thing you can do in golf.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
How old do you think you'll be when you break your age or shoot your
68.
Age?
68. I'm going to shoot 68 when I'm 68.
Yeah. When do you think you'll break your age?
Break my age?
Break it.
When I'm 92.
very good. Very good. One last shout out also to a guy who we've seen on our TV coverage, Lachlan Wood. He's the number one all abilities player in Australia. World number 9, thank you very much.
Good on him.
He's a PGA associate up at Harvey Bay in Queensland. It's an amazing story, Lachlan. He had a horrific car accident when he was 16, 12 broken bones. His leg was shattered into 44 pieces.
Yuck.
Had 40 or 50 surgeries. It's insane. And he did create history last year when he won a Pro-Am on the Adidas PGA circuit here in Australia. He won the Tin Can Bay Pro-Am.
Wow.
And all abilities players never won, beaten all the other pros.
Yeah, okay.
On tour.
Fantastic.
So, anyway, so Lachlan, just a bit of a shout out for him because he's been invited to play in the USGA's, it's basically one of their majors, the PGA Championship.
Yeah.
That's the United States Disability Golf Association, and also the G4D Open and the US Adaptive Open coming up. Whew. And he's holding a fundraiser this Friday at the Beach House in Harvey Bay. So if you're in the area, get along. Please support him by donating. Or if you want to get in touch, message him on his Instagram, which is Lachlan, L-A-C-H-L-A-N, underscore Wood, underscore F-C-P-G. So get behind Lachlan, because an amazing player. We see him here quite a bit on our tournaments. And it'd be great to see him kicking butt over in those tournaments.
FCPG? Yep. What does that stand for?
Football club. What do you think? PG? Yeah. I'm not sure.
Don't know.
Anyway.
All right, FCPG.
Lachlan underscore Wood underscore FCPG.
He's amazing. I remember watching him play last year. He is unbelievable. Mm. But if everyone listening gave $10,
oh,
he'd be sorted.
Yeah. He'd be away.
Sorted.
Sure. He'd be away.
And we're not going to know. Like, who's going to miss $10? No yeah. one.
No, exactly.
Well, listenership is getting pretty high at the moment, isn't
it's
it?
It's huge.
He
it's
might
really
be
big.
A millionaire if the way we're going.
Good will be. Boys, you want some feedback?
Yes, please.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we're going to start this. I'm not going to give you this bit of feedback first, but I want you to be prepared for this because it's coming. We've had a message from Dodsy. Dodsy reckons we have missed the biggest story of the last few months.
Go
so
on.
So we're going to get to that shortly, all right? I want you to think about that because... I think you should be very embarrassed, actually, now I think about
really?
It. Yep.
It's that bad.
It's pretty ordinary.
That we've missed it.
It's ordinary. It's ordinary. Yeah. And okay. You, particularly you, Mark, should know better for reasons that will become obvious.
Okay.
Message from Shane Livo Livingston. Rory appeared, so you were talking before about Pebble Beach and Rory taking his penalty. I think it was a two-shot penalty.
Yep.
Rory appeared to do that dodgy drop like Tiger, copped the penalty before he signed. What an amazing coincidence. So soon after Marco, you mentioned that on the podcast.
Yeah, it was. It was amazing. And I saw that tweet during the week. Good on you, Livo. You're a star.
Mm-hmm.
And it was exactly the same. So he went back as far as he could and for some reason thought that he had a club length.
No, you don't.
You do not. You've got to drop it on that line.
Mm.
Question, Nick, for you from Ian K. Ian wants to know this. Hey, guys, love the podcast. Question, Nick, why aren't you playing on the Champions Tour? Surely you are good enough.
That is a good question.
It is good enough.
Yeah, I do get asked that question a lot, and that would mean for me practicing, number one, which I don't do anymore, traveling, which I really have, I'm completely over after doing it for over 20 years in the US, and one of the reasons I stopped playing was to spend more time at home and the family. That's why we moved back to Australia. But never say never. I'd have to go to Q school. Like I never won in the US, for instance, the Champions Tour. So I'd have to go through a couple of stages and all that. But maybe in a couple of years I might give it a go. But at the moment, I'm very happy being here in Australia and spreading the love of golf down here.
Good on you. How about that? What about the Australian Seniors Tour?
Oh,
you pick and choose.
You know what we're doing. We're playing the Port Arlington Pro-Am coming up on the Legends Tour shortly.
Should we do the podcast from down there? Oh, no, it means you'd have to go down there, Dan.
Oh, well, what are you saying? You're saying
it's a long way. Well, it's a long way.
Yeah.
We don't want to put
out. Maybe we could be down there and he could be up here. Who knows?
Jeez. We'll figure that out.
Should do that.
We've had a lot of comments this week on the Live Piff deal, as you'd imagine. I'm not going to read through them all because we'd be here for like 7 hours. Couple, though. Go You Good Thing has said, where does this leave the DP World Tour boys? Can Piff deal with them and sponsor the European Tour and they're in workers' schedule where those events don't clash and Live players can play that tour for points?
You know, I think the short answer is yes, the way things are going. Maybe. I mean, if the American players, if the DP World Tour is now a feeder tour to the PGA Tour, so the top 10 players on the DP World Tour can go across, and that's why we see Pavon and some of these other players doing so well. If the PGA Tour is sorted and they don't want to travel, like we say, well, the DP World Tour is all about travel.
Mm.
So maybe that is a way for the Piff to grow the game and take the best European players around the world on a European Grand Prix style.
Well, when they first came on the scene, Piff, that was an option, right? The European Tour could have joined forces with the Piff and away they go, but instead they went down the strategic alliance route with the PGA Tour.
Correct.
Do they regret that? I have no idea, but it could still happen.
But if you're all working together and the Piff say, okay, Americans, you stay in America and do your thing, but we still want to grow the game.
Yeah.
Why not? We'll see.
Controversial comment here from Gianluca. Tiger Woods is having far too much say. He and Jay need to move on for the good of the sport.
Tiger's your boy.
Yeah, he is. And we were talking before that Tiger wasn't on board when he went over to Saudi Arabia, when Jay Monahan went to Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
I can kind of see why now. now that we've got the Fenway Group involved in everything. There was just no need for Tiger to go across and say hello to everybody, because it sounds like he's on board with, we're not travelling and we're going to keep the best golfers in America where they belong, school of thought.
Message here from City and Coast Cleaning. Hey, boys, I've heard every episode and I've loved them all. Listened to Marco for years and I've been lucky enough to meet him in person a couple of times as well. I love hearing Nick's thoughts on golf too. Great pod, guys. I look forward to it every week.
Lovely. Who's that?
Brilliant.
Well, it's from City and Coast Cleaning, so I don't know who it is.
Good on you, mate.
Cheers. Place.
Thanks for listening in.
Righto. Strap yourself in. Here's Dodsy's message.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Ooh. Okay. This is what we've missed. The biggest story in golf.
Here's what Dodsy said. Lads, I love the show, but you've missed the biggest story in golf over the summer. The one and only Lucy Underall passing away, one of the great characters in golf movies. The dive into the pool, the night with Ty Webb, the afternoon with Danny Noonan, R.I.P. Lacey. Did I say Lucy or Lacey?
No, you said Lacey.
All right, R.I.P.
Well, she was a big figure in my life for a long time. There is no doubt about that. And it was funny because I reckon I saw a picture about 3 months ago with Lacey and Chevy Chase. And they were there together, you know. And you know, Chevy looks older. And what was her name in real life?
Cindy Morgan.
Cindy Morgan, yeah. Cindy Morgan was sitting on Chevy's, you know, sitting next to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw that picture. I thought, wow, it's nice to see them still together. But a bit of a shock to see that she
died. She wasn't old either.
No, she was 69 years old. And, of course, Lacey Underall died at 69. What a joke.
What a great character in the movie, though. She was fantastic.
Yeah, she's a superstar. And, well, it is one of the biggest stories. I mean, if you're a Caddyshack person, by the way, my friend Ox, David Schwartz, is not a Caddyshack
person. Oh, really?
Person. Can you believe that? What a joke.
Okay. I don't know how you can't be.
It's just so stupid, I can't believe it.
It's actually a great movie.
I'm going to unfriend him now.
You should. That's exactly what you should do. Anyway.
That's the feedback.
It's time for this week's Masterclass.
And this week's Masterclass is a follow-on from last week's, because last week was all about the uphill lie. And from that, I got a lot of requests saying, hey, what about downhill lies? Because we really struggle with those as well. And like most people, yes, it is a tough shot in golf. And like all sloping lies, the first thing you need to do, and I'm going to talk in right-handed terms as I typically do. Apologies to my lefties out there. I got criticized a while ago for not talking in left-handed terms. But anyway, I won't go into that.
It's very difficult. just do right-handed.
Yeah, right-handed.
Don't worry about those lefties.
No, that's, well, hey, hang on. So, for a right-handed golfer, first thing, widen the stance, lean the weight heavily into the left leg. You got to get with the slope, obviously. Now, the shoulders, again, you want to kind of have those shoulders on the same plane as the slope you're going with. So you might feel as though you're tilting your left shoulder down a little bit. Last week, I mentioned uphill, tilt your right shoulder down to line it with the slope. But the key is in the backswing. A lot of people, when they try and hit downhill lies, what tends to happen is they shift their weight immediately into their back leg. Now, what that does is all of a sudden you're laterally moving on a side slope. That's never good, because a lot of people hang back there as they try and come into the ball and they try and lift it. And guess what? You catch it thin or you hit behind the ball. So keep that weight into the front leg on the backswing. Very important. And that will help you to just swing down with the slope.
That's a great tip, actually. That one thing that is one little very, thing. Very good.
See it all the time. And the other thing, ball's going to come out a little lower and it's going to squeeze to the right for right-handed golfers as well. So aim a little bit to the left and maybe take a little bit more loft, because the ball will come out a little bit lower, so you got to allow for that as well, depending on how steep the slope is. But all about shifting the weight, keeping the weight there, swinging down with the slope. The old Gary Player walk after the ball is a good one. I always did that as well. But I'll post a video on socials, and maybe next week, hey, side hill lies, who knows, we'll get them all done.
You might as well get the box set.
That's true.
Where are we left? Are we done?
Well, why don't we finish with hearing a little bit of the famous Lacey Underall?
Oh, please. That'd be nice. Yes. That'd be nice.
See you next week.
Rest in peace.
Cheers, guys.
So, what brings you to this nape of the woods, neck of the wave? How come you're here?
Daddy wanted to broaden me.
In this place? Good luck.
What do you do for excitement?
Oh, I play a lot of golf.
Nixon plays golf. I bet you got a lot of interesting stories about your ball landing in the room.
So what do you do?
I enjoy skiing. skinny skiing. Going to bullfights on acid. I bet you got a lot of nice ties.
What do you mean?
You want to tie me up with some of your ties? Tie?
I've got a good idea.
What?
Let's pretend we're real human beings.
Freeze, Gopher!
Thanks for being part of Talk Birdie to Me with Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. And if you want to be part of the show, drop us a message or comment on the socials. Or you can send an email or leave a voicemail at talkbirdietome.com.au. Thanks to the great team at Ping, they're the best in the business and they'll help you play your best. And the Golf Clearance Outlet. If you're after top quality at prices you won't beat, check them out. golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. Talk Birdie to Me's executive producer is Dan Bradley at Kaizen Media. Sound design, Daryl Misson at loudzebra.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.